Hi, this is Mark from the Epic Podcast, reminding you that you're not wrong, you're not broken, you are most certainly not alone, and you're tuned in to the Bicast at bicast.org.
Bicast, a podcast by and for our bisexual community. This month's topic is biphobia. Joining us is eponymous. Did I get it right?
Yes.
Our angry bisexual with a keyboard. Welcome, Patrick.
Howdy.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Becca.
I'm Odd.
I'm Simone.
I'm John.
I'm Lynette.
And I'm Patrick.
So, Patrick, you, as I said, you are the angry bisexual with a keyboard. And
yes, I am. I stole that line from Dan Savage. He used that to characterize bisexual activists. I take it with pride.
Yay, I love it. I love it when we take our words and reclaim them like that. I've been accused of being called a bimbocrat, and I like that. I wear it proud. You're very familiar to most of us in the community, but there are people that don't actually hang out all at the same places we do. You have a very popular blog. You're also on the board of Binet USA, which is really awesome. Tell us a little bit more about yourself.
I am an activist by nature. I'm 45 years old. I've been bisexual as long as I have had a concept of having a sexual orientation. I spent most of my life in the closet to most people. My wife knew before we were married. In fact, she knew when we met. There's a great story about that. I came out publicly about 4 years ago with the realization that I needed to make up for lost time, that for every time that I let a slur go by, every time I smiled and nodded when somebody told a homophobic or biphobic joke, that I was dying a little inside. And so now I'm making up for lost time, which is why my blog went basically from zero to 60. Boom. For those who aren't familiar with it, it's philoponymous.wordpress.com. And I don't receive any kind of revenue or ad clicks from it. I do it because I have to do it.
Well, and we're glad you do that.
I started off, I was really, really, really incredibly inspired by Odd. Odd had written some articles on busting out biphobic myths and looking at the things that we deal with every day. And one of the things that I've noticed is that really it seems like, and it may not be true, but it seems as though every bisexual activist starts with that basic list, these are the 10 myths of bisexuality, let us break them, which is, I mean, my logo originally was bust all the myths. And what I looked at as I started learning more and digging into queer theory, digging into what's happening with our lives and with around our sexuality, is that it's not sufficient to just come out and bust the myths, because what you need to do is you have to deconstruct them. You have to do it in such a way that you don't cut off one segment of the community. The classic one is the people who assume that to be bisexual is to be polyamorous and that it's part of a definition. And it's really easy for a monogamous bisexual activist to come out and say, no, we're not like that. We're not a bunch of sluts. We're monogamous. But as soon as you say that, you are cutting off the polyamorous segment of the community, and you can't do that. You have to make sure to remain positive to everybody. Make it the big umbrella that everybody can be under. So what I did with my blog, instead of doing, you know, Facebook comments and just talking about stuff, I really wanted to dig deeply into individual issues in as inclusive and complete as possible. For a long time, my middle initial was TLDR, because I have a tendency to write like 5,000 words, single blocks of text. I have people telling me all the time, get some pictures in there. Come on, please. Please, God, a paragraph break would be wonderful. But once I get started, and I know that you've all seen this, once I get started, it takes a lot to stop me, because I see these structures of information and structures of prejudice and structures of stereotype and structures of society, and I have to try to get the whole thing And yet I can't, which is why the blog's like 100,000 words at this point.
But you do a really good job, though. You do. You do.
Thank you.
I haven't read all of them, but I have read several of them 3 or 4 times because it's just well worth to go back and read them because I pull out more each time I do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm particularly fond, of course, of Happy New Year. I just am. And I really like your fruit thing, too.
that was the sequel to the Mincing My Phobia. That was a, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that was tomatoes.
Tomatoes are fruit to me, so. So I always, in my head, I have these conversations with people about that, and I always, instead of tomatoes, I always put in apples and put in Macintosh and Fuji and all these things that call themselves anything but apples. And they are still just apples.
Well, it's a Granny Smith pie. It's different.
Yes, it is. It's a Granny Smith. It's not an apple at all. Okay, that's, yeah, all right. I might have to cut that out. Yeah. The views expressed on the Bicast do not necessarily represent those of Binet USA or the Bicast crew. So we love your blog. I love watching you interact with people online quite a bit because we get topics discussed. We bring up things. And when we have dialogues, we see how people are really thinking. And it may be just one person who, what is the word I'm looking for? Is it instigator?
Conversation?
Yeah. But we all know that we're not going to change that person's mind. But it gives us the opportunity to say what we need to say. And we're saying it for everyone else. Yep. You know, they see it too, yep. Right?
9 out of 10 people in a Facebook thread never say a word. We play into the audience. We will never convince a committed biphobe that they're wrong. But what we will do is we will convince the community that's listening that, wow, there is somebody there on my side.
And they think the way I think, and that I am okay. And, you know,
I'm not alone.
Okay with how, yeah, it isn't okay what this person is saying, and that's very important. It's aggravating and disheartening sometimes, but it's important. Yeah. So, we are going to describe what is biphobia. I have found on a page called www.allaboutcounseling.com on biphobia a definition, and we can all pick it apart if we like afterwards. It may be okay, it may not be. And it says, biphobia is an exaggerated, irrational, or extreme fear of bisexual men or women and will usually lead them to suspect or subsequently avoid most people they envision as bisexual.
Okay. That's a reasonable, it's a good starting point, but can I just say this? People who are biphobic are not scared, they're prats. And that's me being...
Well, I would like to add that it doesn't include enough of the genders of people who are bisexual.
Right. Well, I guess this is more just a very simple explanation, and we can make it more inclusive. So it goes on to say, biphobia caused predominantly in a lack of information is still widely seen throughout a good portion of the public. There are several common ways to identify a biphobic person. Look for these common traits to determine if a person may be suffering from biphobia.
So it's a mental illness now?
Well, according to this webpage.
What's that webpage again? I need to send them a strongly worded email.
www.allaboutcounseling.com. They're saying biphobia is an illness. You got that, right?
Okay. Yeah, I got that. I'm just wondering... Biphobia is no more a mental illness than my fear of spiders.
Yeah,
actually, every phobia is a mental illness.
Yeah, so you're not going to start prescribing things for it, are you?
As somebody who's in training to be a counselor, I need to say that biphobia, homophobia, xenophobia, these are words that are from sociology rather than from psychology.
Yeah.
That's very important. It's not a disease. It's a social thing. It's a cultural piece.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I thought because it was a counseling, I thought they would be using the psychology definition of phobia.
This isn't something like the American Counseling Association home website. This isn't something like the American Psychological Association's official website. This is somebody who's making their money by referring people to different counselors.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Things are going to be weirded, really weird here.
Yep. Exactly. This is not an academic quality.
Yeah, it isn't. It may be enough for lay person. It may be misleading too. So it's something to think about.
And when we get a chance, I really would like to dig a little bit into the fear aspect of biphobia, but I'll wait my turn.
Okay. So you just have some examples of how biphobia presents itself. And that would be thinking that all bisexuals are slutty or unfairly promiscuous, being unable to trust a bisexual person, even in a neutral environment, believing all bisexuals are on the fence or most likely making their relationships for attention, and calling them gay more commonly in a negative connotation for engaging in a same-sex relationship. Those are a couple things. That's not everything.
I would love to see someone try and write a complete list of how biphobia presents itself. They'd be there a long time.
Well, we would just have to be having somebody on a day and night typing away forever, I would think.
Oh, yeah. My blog.
Yeah. Oh, we have someone. It's Patrick. Okay. So, Patrick, please, it's your turn. Go ahead. Tell us what you want to tell us.
Addressing the part of the fear part of biphobia. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. The fear piece is, especially for biphobia, if you look at homophobia, you look at your classic homophobe, your dude who's going to go beat up somebody who's gay. Okay, mm-hmm. He draws a line between himself and gay. Like, and here's what it usually comes down to. And pardon, I'm going to use really essentialist language, and it's not my language; it's their language.
I like boobies, so therefore I'm normal, and this guy likes dick, so there's something seriously wrong with him.
But you present them with someone who's bisexual who says, yeah, you know, I'm pretty much cool with everything, and yeah, this is great. Suddenly this homophobic person can no longer tell themselves from the queer person, and they are filled with fear.
Exactly. Because here's a person that is almost like them too.
Yep.
You know.
And that's biphobia from the straight world, but biphobia coming from the gay world, there's a whole nother fear. There's the fear that all the people that have been beating on them and saying, you're making a sinful choice, that they may be right, that there may be a choice, because they look at us and go, well, this person might be with this person, and they might be with this person, they might be with this person, of this gender, this gender, this gender. So essentially they're, quote, choosing. So maybe it's not. Now, I actually believe born this way, but I believe that I was born with the potential to love, to have sex, sexual attraction, to have this wonderful, beautiful, sweaty, uncomfortable, crazy, undignified thing with people of all different genders. I think I was born that way.
I'm just thinking about what Patrick said and processing it. Was it Patrick who said that? Yes, it was. I can see what you mean by the fear aspect of it, and there's an excellent quotation about homophobia and it's aimed at generally straight men, and it's homophobia, the fear that a gay man will treat you how you treat women.
Yes.
And it's all based around this story of a young man who got in like a taxi cab in New York, ended up sharing a taxi with a gay man. And he said the whole time he was in the taxi, he was afraid that this man was going to start leering at him or start touching him up or all these sort of things that women deal with from any man like that, from not any man, but could potentially deal with from any man. I will be very careful what I say with the whole kerfuffle around that recently. And so it was sort of born from that. You know, that is how a straight man would make a woman feel if they were sharing a taxi who she didn't know. And that's how straight men feel with gay men. So I don't know, to me, I think what I always found strange with biphobia was this need from both sides to make us gay. looking at it, I can sort of see it from both points of view. Generally depends on your gender and your sex. But generally, bisexual men, I've noticed, straight men have this urge to make bisexual men straight, to try and identify with them and neutralise the threat by making it an ally, an alliance. Or they go the other route and they try and neutralise the threat by trying to make bisexual men gay and therefore making them apparently lesser. And then with women, it's a case of they try and make women attracted to men because that gives them control, or try and make them lesbians because then they can hold their hands up and say, well, not my fault. Yeah, nothing to do with me. And they can. I think a lot of biphobia is just about, it's about trying to justify itself. That's what I found. I mean, with me, it was a case of, I've had a lot of people say to me, oh, no. I'm not biphobic, I'm friends with you. I just think that actually you're not bisexual because you're with a man now. And I'm just like, really? You should see me watching the tennis because, yeah, the women's tennis.
Yeah.
5 minutes, trust me. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like,
yeah.
I think a lot of people try and justify their own ignorance. A lot of it is ignorance, and I'm not saying that, you know, if someone genuinely doesn't understand, then I don't define that as biphobia, as long as they're willing to learn. I think the point of it comes from, and it's the same with all sort of, if you've got a beef against a certain sector of society or a certain group, it's the point at which you are not willing to kill your own ignorance. That's when it stops being ignorance and becomes thought out, planned, deliberate, anti, insert your favourite minority group here. And
yeah.
like you said, you can't educate those who don't want to be educated. You can try, but you can't. You've just got to, unfortunately, there's not much we can do about it. We're talking about what the hell to do about it, but...
But we can support ourselves and those like us around us and educate those that are willing to learn.
Yeah.
They're around them too.
That's what we do. And then we just hope, and if you're religious, pray that eventually those people who aren't willing to learn will fall out of the gene pool or die off of old age. Whatever happens, just hopefully they'll self-destruct eventually, because they seem to.
Well, looking back on history, I'm not sure, but Odd, what do you think? You're on.
Okay. I think that definition is really strangely broad, but strangely specific. Biphobia is just, I'm just going to do whatever hurts or makes bisexual people feel uncomfortable or unwanted or unwelcome or negatively about themselves and other bisexuals. Coming from an outside source, for now. That can also be internalized by phobia, but we're just going to work off this one. I had the distinct pleasure and totally awesome luck of going to Because over this weekend, where I got to hang out with Patrick and tons of other awesome people, and it was so amazing. It's like living next to a really good restaurant, but only eating really crap food from the gas station, and then you go over to the restaurant and you eat, and you're like, why the hell have I been eating all this crap food from the gas station when this is right here? It was like that because I've experienced so much both overt, like, conscious biphobia in LNG spaces and, you know, unconscious, just like cultural norm assumption biphobia, that when I went to Because and it was so welcoming and it was so wonderful to be there, that now I'm just like, I am not going back to spaces where biphobia, bi erasure is either implicitly or explicitly condoned. I am not eating the crap gas station food anymore when I can go put all my time and energy into, you know, these really great spaces that are supportive and wonderful and don't have biphobia. Why am I going to go give myself food poisoning from a dollar egg sandwich when I can go eat delicious sushi over here? It doesn't make any sense. And biphobia manifests in just like tons of ways. There's explicit, there's, you know, bisexual women are available to men, so therefore I can rape you, said the rapist. Not me. And then there's just implicit ways, like just that kind of uneasy feeling you get when you go to some LG, quote-unquote, BT spaces where it's like, oh, you're here, and you do the amazing, like, disappearing trick where if you go alone, you're obviously monosexual. You're lesbian and gay until you mention your partner of a different gender. And then suddenly, oh, you're an ally. And then if you have a partner of a different or same gender, you become, oh, you're gay. And if you're just alone, you just, like, turn sideways and don't exist. I don't know. You become a pole. And it's just really frustrating. And I don't want to put up with that anymore. I'm really tired of that. I'm really tired of putting energy and things into somewhere where I'm not being recognized. And I can see from my own experience working with LGBT groups, especially in college age students, just the kind of really negative impact that biphobia and either tacit or, you know, overt has on them and their development. And Lorraine, in her interview for this show, plug, go listen to that, people, mentioned that bisexuals are often, like, the confessor. And, you know, I've had other members of, like, boards of LGBT groups come up to me and be like, well, I'm really bisexual, but I'm afraid to say it. And I'm like, you're the president or the whatever. You're an important person in this community. If you're afraid to say it, what is that freshman doing?
Yeah, what is that fragile teenager doing, you know?
Yeah, so I'm going to wrap it up there.
I've had that. I will call it the LG Association at my university. The number of times I've been sat in that common room with just one other person, it's only a small room, and it's a case of, oh, by the way, I'm actually bisexual as well, and I think it's really good that you speak out and argue when they tell you you're not, but I can't do that.
No.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate. Simone, my love, how are you doing?
I'm good. I am listening and I'm taking in all the information.
Yeah. Do you have anything you'd like to add right now? You've been on the boards, on the bisexual boards for quite a long time. I'm sure you've experienced just about any kind of biphobic comment there ever was to hear.
It's mostly just from the guys, and I think I said this the last time that I was on, that they're like, you just haven't met the right guy.
Yeah.
Can we all just do a collective moment where we put our heads in our hands and close our eyes?
That was it.
If it's I haven't met the right guy yet, and someone says that to you, then just be like, yeah, and it sure as hell isn't going to be you.
Oh, no.
That would usually be the response I had. I mean, because, you know, it's been years and years now. And you guys were saying that you just, like, that no one would even say that they were bi. And at some point I did, like, after, I think, maybe, like, after 5 years of all that, I was like, okay. This is no longer something that I'm going to say.
Well, you beat your head against the wall,
Yeah, because it is ridiculous, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, we're here now. We'll yell for you. We'll yell what? We'll stand up and scream with you.
I came out kind of late compared to some. I came out in my early 40s here, and I came out as bi. I had always kind of conceptualized my sexuality as bisexual. So there was never that sort of, I don't even think I went through that, you know, there's this sexuality, it's just a phase. It's called straight, because every queer person seems like they go through straight first.
Can
I skipped that phase.
Write that down, Patrick.
I skipped the straight phase and went right to queer. But I did it very secretly, because when I first became aware of my sexuality was also right kind of at the beginning of the plague. And so it's like, hey, wow, I'm a sexuality and it's going to kill me. Wow. So getting away from that, I want to get to the biphobia here. Would you mind if I shared an experience of biphobia online that I had that was kind of the first
online really outright biphobia I ran into.
Yes, please go ahead.
It was on the comments page of, are you ready? The Advocate.
Ooh.
And it was an article about Lady Gaga. And I went in and said, yeah, she's not an ally. She's bisexual. And the response I got from this one person in particular was, well, okay, now bisexuality is 50-50, exactly the same attraction to men and women, and because nobody is exactly perfectly 50-50, everybody has a preference. So what you need to do now is quit hating yourself, honey, and just come out. And I'm like, I said,
oh my God.
I said, well, you know, I've been married to a woman for a couple of decades here. And, no, I'm not a straight ally. Ask anybody. Because when I was in the closet and I was passing for straight, when I came out, I asked people that I'd known for 5 years, for 10 years, for 30 years, for 35 years, people I went to junior high school with. And I was like, you know, yeah, I'm queer. I'm out of the closet. And they're like, yeah, you know, we always knew. I wish somebody had told me that I was that bad at being at passing for straight.
You know, I'm 57 and I just came out last year. And
congratulations!
Like I was thinking, yeah, mainly to myself because I had internal biphobia you would not believe. And I told my daughter, she goes, yeah, I know. You know, and it's not because I had relationships or anything. It's just she knows. She knew. You know, they all kind of reacted that way. One of them said, oh, I thought you were going to tell me something terrible. Are you okay? You know, can you babysit tomorrow? You know, it was just, it was a total non-reaction on their part. So, yeah, I get that.
And to tell the truth, it might have been the way that I have always pronounced it, but fabulous. But
well, that's as good an indicator as any.
Yeah, I guess me slobbering all over Tracy Chapman for about 5 years probably was a big indicator. Hey, John.
Hey. Actually, just what you said, internalized biphobia, that is when it's clinical. And I've seen it many, many times with people's internalized homophobia, internalized biphobia, et cetera, where it's really not about you, it's about me and where I am at in my life. And, you know, we really, coming out process for us is about first dealing with our own self-hate and learning that we shouldn't be hating ourselves because that's when we start getting to the place where we can start getting healthy. And being bisexual, that biphobia, that internalized biphobia, the biphobia and homophobia that came from the outside world that I internalized was my problem, right? And until I dealt with my own true self, then I was going to hate a part of myself, and I had to stop hating a part of myself. So that's why I see the using terms like monosexist as being useful. You know, I was going to go and start what I've written so far is that all of the sexisms work in the same way, really. Monosexism, cissexism, the way we typically use the word sexism, which is against women. And really all of these sexisms have kind of the same root, that it's all about maintaining the patriarchy and not allowing for those of us who do not want to maintain the patriarchy a space in the discussion or a place. How I see it, what we call biphobia, it's about denying our space in the LGBT world and denying us a voice in the issues. What I fear, and I see it a lot within our community these days, especially since we're growing again. I mean, we're really, I haven't seen this much growth in our community for over a decade. For the last decade, we've been doing a lot of our work really using social media and before that mailing list, et cetera, to really do coalition kind of efforts. One of the big coalition efforts I can recall is, I think it was 2007 when the National ENDA bill was being attempted to be turned into an exclusive bill by the Human Rights Campaign. And Barney Frank was in the House turning the ENDA bill to a bill that excluded trans people. Actually, Tammy Baldwin was on the other side saying, no, we can't do this. We can't throw we can't throw trans people under the bus yet again. And Binet USA was part of that coalition that really fought it. And we were, and Binet USA at that point was really the activist who had all been around bisexual work for so many years in those, in a lot of those kind of situations, being activated to support. But these days, we have groups forming, new groups forming, people that I haven't seen for over a decade or 15 years. I'm seeing them again, doing work and getting organized and building organizations. We have a Binet USA that I really am excited to be part of today. It's really growing again, and there's lots of work to do. I read the LGBT press, and every time I read, there's another blogger or another bisexual writer getting into all of these spaces that we feel that for so many years we've been left out of. Go to the Advocate today, right in the menu, there's a big button right at the top. It says bisexuality. Just click it and all of our articles appear in the tags. And those kind of things weren't happening 5 years ago, even a couple years ago. So when we are dealing with biphobia today among some of the gay activists, they're really trying to keep us out of that space. And they're trying to keep us out of that space for a lot of reasons. One of my great examples that I tell people from the early days is read about Brenda Howard. Brenda Howard not only brought bisexuals into that post-Stonewall gay liberation front milieu in New York, she was also bringing in lots of other people who have been marginalized. And when bisexuals have more of a space in the LGBT world, we are bringing all of these other marginalized communities in, people that we've worked with, who we've sat at the kiddie table with for so many years, griping about why aren't they doing this and why aren't they doing that. I'm not, I support marriage, but I really think we need to be doing this work, that work, and the other work. That's why we have people trying to police us out of that movement. So it's great for us to have bi space. It's great for us to build it. I'm building bisexual support community in this city, but I'm doing it inside of the LGBT world because we have to be in those spaces. Even we're going to find people that are hostile to us. They're bullies. And the reason that they're bullying us out of those spaces is because they want complete control of those spaces, and they do not want to deal with our issues, be they our bisexual issues, be they trans issues, be they race issues, and be they class issues, be they youth issues, be the other parts of the gay and lesbian community that aren't really accepted that much anymore, or like bears and people that are into non-traditional sex, the BDSD communities, those kind of places that have been really in many ways policed out even more than we've been policed out.
White picket fenced out.
Well, let's look at Pride. I mean, there's a lot of cities that like discourage people from expressing themselves on Pride Day if they don't fit a few different types of gays and lesbians. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's not just about us. And we always should, when we are talking about biphobia and bi erasure and those issues, we have to be inclusive and intersectional about it, right?
Absolutely.
Because we're talking to everybody else. And we're talking to the other marginalized people, too. And we should be showing the other marginalized communities that we all need to work together to kind of fix the problems with Gay Inc.
Well, absolutely. We are them and they are us. So you're talking about using the monosexual, I'm not even saying it right, sexualism on a large scale to do some very constructive work to fight it, like when you're talking about the articles and being in there and having the great articles that are being published now, really great articles. And, of course, they are coming out in force to cause as much trouble in the comments as possible. But what I see happening now is not just one or two person trying to stand up for us against these commenters. It is a slew of us are coming in. And this is a good thing. This is a good thing. We have to back each other up. We have to stand up and say the same thing and fight the same way on a big level. And then on a personal level, we have to be very conscious of the microaggressions that go on around us and protect our group. And when I say our group, I don't mean just bisexuals. I mean all of us that are marginalized and basically told to go sit down and shut up. You know, we have to stand with them too. But on a personal level, how do I deal with that person who's using these shame tactics against me? What do I say to them?
I'd like to read something that speaks to what John was talking about and what you were talking about. It's from my blog from like a year ago. May I have your permission to read this paragraph?
Sure.
Please do. Okay.
It's from Slicing Off the Margins. It's the very end. Imagine the LGBT community as a piece of paper with something written on it, perhaps the famous queer agenda. It's written in standard style, some blank space around it, and your job is to mail this piece of paper, to get this message to a recipient who can do something with it. Now, someone tells you the paper is too big to fit in the envelope. It's already smaller than the papers that are already in there, but hey, you really need to get this delivered, so you cut off the bottom third. Nope, they tell you, still too wide. So you cut off the blank spaces on the sides. Nope, they say, still too big. So you keep cutting. Pretty soon you're cutting off parts of the words, even whole sentences. And after a while, you've forgotten that the point of putting the paper in the envelope was not to get the paper in however you could, but to get the words read by the person you're mailing it to. You've confused the medium with the message and willingly mangled the message so it will fit the medium. Did your message actually get across? Or did all you accomplish was to send the meta message that says you're willing to cut off anything they might not like, it's okay to cut you off too. And that's what's happening.
Exactly. I have to totally agree with that. That is, yeah, that pretty much explains it, you know.
Well, yeah.
I even see binary bisexual as being felt like being shoved out and being not recognized, which is really not something we want to do. Hello, you know, because I think it's the way people are wording things, and I that's upsetting. I mean, you know, it's bad enough, you know, we get told what we are by other people, and then our own people tell us what we are too, and it's difficult.
I have this sort of mental image, if you will, of imagine the entire LGBTQ spectrum. Okay, imagine that as like a building with a huge lobby. And then in the lobby, you've got a marquee. And that's the bisexual umbrella. Now, the problem with that is, and then imagine you're going to get, 80% of all the employees in your high-rise building under that marquee. That's going to be difficult. People are going to start pushing and shoving. And eventually someone's going to knock that marquee over. And they're going to destroy it and things are going to get hairy. And that's what's happening because there's so much infighting under the bisexual umbrella. Because we're trying to justify ourselves to people outside of it. that we're not presenting a united front. And if you think the growth we have now is amazing, imagine what we could do if we actually just sort of looked at it and went, you know what, actually, this is my label. I'm going to fight for my right to use it. It doesn't mean the same thing to me as it does to you, but you picked it as well, and you've got your reasons for it. So rather than fighting you over what the label means, I'm going to stand up and show the rest of them that this label means unity. This label means that we stand together, and this label means that we are a community. And if we did that, I think we would solve a lot of problems. The only problem is convincing the entire bisexual umbrella to do that.
You know, I really have to strongly disagree. I don't think your characterization of the bisexual umbrella today is in any way like it really is today. You're describing a bisexual community from 20 years ago. We had a lot of these battles. We had, you know, we had battles over really sexism from bisexual cis men. That goes back a long time. We had battles over our inclusiveness of trans and people who are outside of the cis spectrum. Those were battles that we were having 15 years ago, and most of those have been accomplished. I mean, I think we get really go overboard about is when we are seeing people using terms like pansexual today and trying to start battles. A lot of, I will say that that's why I've really pushed focus on bisexual history, because those battles go away when people understand that there is a bisexual history. A lot of these kids are going through college, going through gender studies, going through queer studies, and not getting an ounce or maybe an ounce or two of bisexual history. And they do not know that we have a long story going way back. And it's not just Brenda Howard. It's a story that goes throughout.
I'm 57 years old, my family has been involved in the gay and lesbian community a long time. Not me in particular, but them. I had no idea. I mean, and I'm 57. I didn't have a clue.
I mean, when I describe that, I describe the battles I'm caught in. I'm a university student. When I sit in my university common room, my supposedly LGBTQ safe space, and I have people telling me, you can't be bisexual if you're attracted to people who are trans. Or you can't be bisexual if you've only slept with a man, or you can't do this, or you can't do that. These battles are still being fought. And it's, again, you're absolutely right. It's because people don't know the history. So they don't know that these battles have already been fought. What's happened is the battles were fought, but the victories were not publicized.
I really believe that we had a lot of victories. And we had a movement that was hijacked in the late 90s by a $25 million a year national gay rights organization. And that agenda that we were working on in the 90s and the early 2000s was pretty much put into boxes so that the battle over marriage could get done. And really, it was the battle over marriage. The 93 March, which was actually really inclusive of 1.9 million people coming to Washington, D.C. to march, was about DOMA and DAT, which the early Clinton administration was pushing. These were two very harmful pieces of legislation for the entire LGBT community, and those were really important issues, but they were not the entire agenda. And we get focused so much on those two pieces, marriage being first and don't ask, don't tell being second. And really at the state level, the other work was being done. employment non-discrimination legislation was really state work. There's been an end to bill in D.C. for quite a number of decades now, and it's never moved forward. It was amazing that even this one with the religious exceptions finally passed a Senate. That was a victory in itself. It's not a federal ender that I think goes even close to enough, but that was a huge victory. But we had all these other things that we were doing, and we've really had to do those things, all that other work that we do under, way under the big support of the HRC, mm-hmm. right? They're not, they will give lip service to it. They will give lip service to us when we lobby enough. But, really, it's been that way for really since the beginning of this century.
And they're always so happy to take our money, aren't they?
Well, yes, they are. And I use our stats too, by the way. Mm-hmm. Those are useful.
Oh, yeah, and that is really why these things are coming back up. That's why there's attempts to bully us out. And when you're in university and you hear the biphobic kinds of things that you hear, you're hearing it from a minority, and they're hearing it from people who are telling them what to say. You know?
Yes.
I mean,
they are sock puppets. They probably, for the most part, don't even know what they're doing. They're just saying whatever somebody they think is important or knows what they're talking about or they got a crush on says, and there you go.
The worst thing in the world is when a straight ally says, well, no, you have to be panned because it reinforces the gender binary. It's like, you're straight. You're a straight person, and you're telling me about reinforcing this gender binary? Come on.
Hello? How binary can you get?
Yeah. And it's also, that's why it's important to, when we're talking, especially to gays and lesbians, that we put things in terms of of monosexism instead of biphobia, because the way those terms go can create different outcomes. One is a very reactive, and one is a very proactive, because a lot of those people are spouting stereotypes because they are ignorant and they need to learn. And then there's a whole other segment of lots and lots of gay and lesbian people. I think I have identified a new definition of bi-curious, which is those who want to be allies and want to be educated about our issues and they're totally happy with their monosexuality, but they really want to be there for us, and they want to learn where we're mm-hmm. coming from and what our issues are and how to speak as allies about us. And, I'll tell you, on Sunday, I had a number of gays and lesbians come up to our table to get our bisexual brochure, because it has information for them in it too. And they want to learn. So
I know.
They're bi-curious.
Yeah. Jung and I had a really good experience when we were on KBOO, because she was really genuinely upset about the way things were going with for the bisexual community. She was very much an ally, and it was, I was really happy about that. She was genuinely apologizing for everybody, which she didn't have to do. I mean, really, she's not responsible for everybody else's behavior, And I've recently been in contact with someone on the queer world who is becoming a very fast ally, who is very much wants to know what's going on, and they identify as gay. So it's not everybody's out to get us. Some people really want to know. But there are enough of them out there who have something invested in keeping us, in using shame tactics and all of those different little things to try to keep us beat down. And we need to be able to know how to answer those things and as a group, in force, and individually. And one of the things we can do, like John was saying, is local groups, support groups. Get on the universities. Get your own little bisexual group going. You know, hang out at Binet USA. Anybody else have any good ideas? I think I'd love to see this little biphobia app. Like, so whenever people say these things, you can like pull it up real quick and go, oh, I can answer this. You know, because I'm not always so quick at the thought when somebody's, you know, I mean, several times I've had people say very bad things that I just was so dumbfounded. I just did not have a response. I was just like, what? And, you know, of course, later, 15 minutes later, I had the perfect response, but they were gone. You know.
I think one of the most important things we can do is call out callous disregard when we see it. Call it out. Let it be known that this isn't ignorance. This isn't just not knowing. This is callous disregard. This is throwing our community under the bus. This is real. This is happening. I think it's important that we get those words out there. Callous disregard, because that's what they're doing. We can't excuse it as ignorance anymore. We've talked about it. We've told them. We've talked.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't an accident. This isn't naivete no. on the part of the GGGG community. This is callous disregard.
If you get into and you read the articles and you hear those comments, those are all planned, deliberate hate tactics. And they don't waver. No matter what argument somebody puts up, they find some other way of trying to beat it down. And it's deliberate. These people do not like us, and they want to put us in as bad a light as possible and say the worst things they can.
Well, the fact that these people are coming to our articles and our websites and making these comments proves that it's not just callous, it's focused, it's directed.
Yes, it's directed. It's directed. And what makes me think is that, I'm sorry, just one moment.
Yeah.
What it makes me think is that we're starting to scare them, and we're doing the right thing.
Woohoo!
So it gives me it gives me even more of a drive to stay at it, because the more we scare them, the louder they're going to start saying things, and they're going to get worse, and they're going to cut their own throats, because they're going to be people going like, you don't represent me.
At this
you know?
Point, I think what we're doing is we're handing them rope, and eventually they'll have enough to tie themselves a noose.
Well, whether they do or not, I'm not gonna let them walk all over me to do it. That's all I know. I'm done with that.
At some point, the hate gets so deep that they have to admit we exist.
Well, exactly. You know, you can't say, "Oh, all you bisexuals don't exist," and then on the other hand, say, "Well, all you bisexuals are cheaters," because that doesn't even make sense. How could something that doesn't exist cheat? You know.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Just dealing last week with a group of trolls on The Advocate. The one who is the head troll, and he's actually attacked me a number of times, not just on The Advocate. I remember a progressive site that I have a connection to. There was an article about, a month ago on the men's rights movement. And he was the same guy who attacked me and a bunch of other people for our feminist positions. Not only that, the next day there was an article from a gay man who had a really great story and perspective on how to be a trans ally. And he was back attacking the gay writer for being a trans ally. These are the same people. They're not
it's
just
the same
we
people.
We are. They are not just after us. They are after everybody.
And yeah, after, and I.
And,
yeah.
And one of the ways that we need to, and I'll tell you, what we have to be doing more of, is asking for the places that we are blogging to, and having articles written in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to police the comments. Because mm-hmm. that's the biggest problem with the internet
yeah.
and social media, is that trolls take over the comment space, and trolls will dominate it to a point in which no rational person will want to go back to that space
They really hijack it, and I know who exactly you're talking about, because I've gone around with him too before, you know, and Yeah, I know who you're talking about. And there's a couple of them. And, yeah, be mindful of them because they will hijack the whole thread. If you respond to them or talk to them or anything, they will hijack the whole thread, you know, and they'll just keep trying.
They have to succeed. Well, they have to be deleted. They have to be – and if they keep it up, they have to be banned from commenting because that's how it works.
This particular person has a real agenda. I mean, they've stated what their position is and who they work for, and, you know, they wanted to know personal things about, well, John, you know, and it was said in a threatening manner, like, I'm going to find out about you, and not very veiled, but, you know, this person is a problem.
This is the problem, though. We're asking people to stand up and be counted and stand with us. But the minute we do that, they step into the firing line. And right now, we're asking them to do that, continuing the analogy, with no body armor and nothing to fire back with. And we're building up our armory and we're getting together, but it takes time. And I hate using these sort of militant analogies, but when these people are threatening to come and find you and hurt you, I've had the run around with similar people. The nights I've locked my door, I've not dared to go to bed because someone who I know can find my address through my email address has threatened me, and I haven't dared go to bed because I'm waiting for them to show up outside my door.
Yeah, and it's a real problem. The only thing I can relate this to is every activist movement ever since I was a young person. And I've seen a lot of activist movements since I was young because I was born in 1957. I saw them all get killed off, you know. And that is one of the biggest things they do to try to squelch is throw the fear into you. I don't know what to tell you. If you really think that you are in a position of danger, then certainly be careful.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to let them try to bully me. I'm sorry.
Exactly. Yeah. No matter how many sleepless nights I have to spend with the I will not stop talking and I will.
Yeah. Exactly. And eventually, you know, it becomes a place where you don't have to do that anymore. But it is part of the process, unfortunately.
The thing that happened for me when I came out is I still had the same fears I had before.
Yeah.
But I no longer had the fear that I was going to get found out.
Well, I didn't have the fear of myself anymore. I had that strength now.
Yeah.
I had a strength of commitment and honesty. Yes, exactly, Patrick. That's it. I didn't have the fear of getting found out. You know, I didn't have that power. The power is all back on my court now.
Exactly. You
know? There's nothing they can touch me with. They can't touch
exactly.
Me. The only weapon they have against me has become my armor. What are they going to do?
Exactly.
Yes,
you know?
But we're talking about comments on social media. And I hopefully we're still talking about that and not talking about people who are going to physically assault us. Because if anybody's going to physically assault us, then we really need to talk to our LGBT liaison at our local police department. You know, and give them evidence and give them information so that they can launch an investigation and prosecute.
There's an LGBT liaison with the police. Our previous police chief said there were no gay people in St. Cloud.
Okay, well, you know, maybe not where you live, but I know where I live. And we have those resources. We've done the work, right? And that's LGBT work that's been done over decades and decades and decades to get those kind of bodies established and to make them work for us. But I'm not talking about that physical assault. I'm talking about the cyberbullying that we face. And
well, yes, that's what we were talking about too.
Yeah, let me finish this. I'm talking about the cyberbullying that we face and where we might all have thick skins. I have a really thick skin. I've been out for decades. So, you know, I've heard it all. I've dealt with it all. And, you know, I know how to be proactive about it. But when those comments exist in these spaces, we have to protect those people who are just out, who are just trying to live as they are, just like we are, from those kind of bullies. and seeing so much of that kind of bullying going on. And that requires a different kind of policing. That requires social media people that have rights to delete comments.
Moderate.
To go delete them. For us to have the rights to go into comments and to delete hostile comments. I run other blogs and pages, and you know, we have a term called Banistan. We're going to send, you know, the first time you do something really stupid, we say, you know, we've deleted these comments. The next time you do it, you go to Banistan, which means you can never talk on this page again. And when they, and if they do it a second time, then yes, that's where they go. They never come back. They're gone. And we have to tell the LGBT press that we need a safe space there. And when that space for us isn't safe, we have to go back to them and say, you have to make this space safer for us.
Hi, Odd. How you doing? Are you there?
I'm doing good. Yeah, I'm here. I just turned my mic off because my cats are making a lot of noise, and I didn't want to have a lot of meowing.
Simone, how are you?
I'm getting tired.
It's like, what, 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning?
It's 2:20 a.m.
Oh, okay. Well, we're past an hour, you guys. Anything else we want to wrap up, say here?
I think I'm good.
I'm good. Are you good, John?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Good.
I want to thank the Bicast cast and crew for inviting me on today. This has been fantastic. I'd like to maybe come back some other day if I can. This has been phenomenal. John, I've loved hearing what you've got to say. Everybody, just wow, awesome. This is like a little piece of Because that's continuing into the week here. This is bisexual community. This is bisexual activism. This is fabulous. I love it.
We have a really good time. We love having you on. You can come back anytime you want, okay?
Sweet.
We loved it.
Okay,
hold on. This is a section where we all get a promo stuff. Patrick, I heard a rumor that you were working on something new for Queer Theory. Is that true?
I want to continue building on my stuff. I'm working on a research project right now that involves some really interesting research that's out there right now, done by people like Alan Savoni, and that's really making a lot of sense about how the conventional paradigms of dealing with marginalized communities don't work the same way when you talk about invisible marginalized communities. And I'm working on an article right now on that that's really got some important implications for our future progress.
Keep us posted on that. Okay, Art, do you have anything you want to plug?
The Transgender Violence Tracking Project now has stickers. And I just got mine. It's really great. And we also have a spokeswoman, Kristen Beck, who is a retired Navy SEAL. And the portal also is in the stages of getting a phone app to report things as you go. So,
oh, that's fantastic.
So check that out.
Okay, Becca?
Nothing to plug that I can think of this time around, actually.
I know the BiCon is coming up, right?
The BiCon's coming up in Britain. I don't know when that is this year.
And Simone, how about you?
I have nothing on the bisexual front. But if you're like Fringe, please listen to my podcast.
Fringe is good. Fringe is good. And John, how about you?
We did a lot of work already for Pride, and now Pride's over. We're still doing the meetups. So anybody who's in the DMV area, which is Maryland, the district, and Virginia, and that includes halfway to Richmond and all the way to Baltimore. So you can join our meetup, which is at meetup.com/BiNet, and you'll be on our list. And every time we do an event, you'll get a notification.
Emily, you know what? I think I'll just add mine in. Anyway, I'm going to Northwest Pride in Portland this weekend and probably to Central Oregon Pride in Bend on the 28th. Great day to go, right? So all these links will be available on the website. Thank you, guys. You've all been great. Patrick had to go already. So goodbye, Patrick.
Goodbye, and Patrick.
I love all you guys. You're not wrong. You're not broken. You're not alone. You're a human being, and you're bisexual. Bye.
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 Bye. Okay, everybody okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you're not alone. You got a dog right there next to you.
and a cat somewhere, too. Oh, she does not like anybody walking by the door, just by the outside. Anybody. She just works.
I'm going to go get some food, you guys. Talk to you later.
Bye, Odd.
Bye.
Bye, Simone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, Becca.
Bye.
To all of you in the Portland area who are attending Pride on Saturday and Sunday, the Bi Brigade has a resource booth available. I encourage all of you to stop by and meet all the lovely people there and see what they have to offer. Thank you.
You know, I had 10 people come up to our booth on Sunday, basically asking us if we were pan-friendly or if we had pan members in our group, which I could say yes to both. But, like, it was almost like, you know, we were always open. We've always been open.
Well, I firmly dig into stuff, you know?
Huh?
What was that? It glitched, whatever you said.
I said they're being told stuff. They're being told that we're all very...
Yeah.
I remember when we were first talking about setting this up. And I remember talking to Lynette and saying we've got to make sure we're pan-inclusive. Because most of us, if we were going by what people think of the technical terms, would identify as pan anyway.
Well, yeah.
It's just...
Okay.
Yeah, it's just one of the many other ways that we identify ourselves in the bi community.
Yeah, but I think somebody's telling them, those bisexuals, they don't like pans. They don't like pans.
Well, no,
you need to hang with us. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it really comes down to, like, that we're cisphiles.
Well, whatever,
I like that new word.
Cisphiles.
It comes from homophile, which is like the pre-Stonewall...
Yeah.
Gay rights movement. So
next week on the Cis Files.
Oh my God.
The truth is out there.
You, Patrick. Okay, so Patrick is the reason my WordPress stats are going insane.
Yeah.
Okay.
You fit that.